And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords. And Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. It's already Friday.
Yay.
Yay. It's gone by quick. Busy yeah. news cycle, I think, has contributed to that.
I think a great deal, in fact.
Yeah. Been hectic.
All right. Speaking of which, let's get to some of the major headlines, starting with President Yoon's plans to invest heavily on nuclear energy, our first keyword of the day.
Boost nuclear industry.
So President Yoon has promised to revive the country's nuclear power industry with new projects worth trillions of won and deregulation, as we've talked about in the past. It was a pretty abrupt pivot from the previous Moon Jae-in administration. Can you run us through the details of his plan?
Right, so he told a town hall meeting in Changwon that nuclear equipment orders worth 3.3 trillion won will actually be placed this year. There will also be a special financial support of 1 trillion won as well. So the overall funds will be over 4 trillion won. Now, Changwon actually is a key industrial hub for Korea's nuclear sector. So the location of such a pledge was fitting. It's also home to a major nuclear reactor developer as well. Now, Yoon also said the government would change some tax rules also to help companies that invest in making nuclear power equipment or do R&D. And he added that over 4 trillion won will be poured into nuclear R&D over the course of 5 years under his administration, with small module reactor technology also one of the main focuses. Now, the government plans to establish a mid to long term plan for nuclear plant projects spanning until 2050 within this year. Now, the Yoon administration aims to export 10 nuclear power plants by 2030. There's already been a few exports of such so far. The Middle East, one destination is most noteworthy. Now, for Changwon itself, Yoon promised to update the Changwon National Industrial Complex to make it a place where culture and industry come together. That's part of his goal of trying to take the focus away from the capital region and make other cities outside of the capital region more culturally and economically active. And he said the government would change rules to make it easier for companies to build factories and mix different types of businesses as well.
All right, we'll leave it there for now so we can move on to the impending tug of war between doctors and the government. It continues with a rally expected on March 3rd, I believe. Let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Medical chaos.
So more and more trainee doctors are walking out despite back-to-work orders by the government, with tensions escalating further. The government is working desperately to try to resolve the issue and come up with countermeasures. I heard by yesterday's standards, over 70% of all resident doctors have actually given their resignation. What's the latest?
Yeah, the situation is seriously worsening at the moment. The Central Disaster and Safety Countermeasure Headquarters is actually holding a meeting with officials from different departments to address the issue, and Prime Minister Han Duck-soo will be chairing that meeting. Now, the health and medical crisis level has also been raised from alert to the highest level of serious. Now, previously, the health ministry set up a special headquarters for dealing with the doctors' protests. They said the situation was getting more serious. And as you said, more than 7 out of 10 of all trainee doctors nationwide have quit, with the numbers increasing each day. This is despite, of course, the government warning that doctors who don't come back to work could lose their medical licenses. Now, the Korean Medical Association supports the decision of the interns and residents, stating it's not a collective action, but a personal choice. Now, the standoff between the government and medical community is leaving patients to bear the brunt of what's being dubbed as a medical disaster. Now, the KMA plans to hold a nationwide rally of doctors on March 3rd and conduct a vote among all members on whether to take collective action. So for the time being, for now, it is the interns and residents, these trainee doctors, but we could see some practicing doctors or surgeons adding to that crisis if they walk off the job as well, of course, leaving patients to suffer because of it. And there's been a lot of surgeries and medications and even simply prescriptions as well being delayed for a lot of patients at what is general hospitals now, but whether that could expand to other kind of local hospitals remains to be seen, but it is something that it is feared.
That's right. I'm not quite sure if this is the most important part of the conversation, but as far as the ability for the government to actually revoke a medical license for these walkouts and collective action, that seems to be debatable too. I mean, you put a room full of lawyers and ask them the same question, they would give you a 50-50 answer. Some would say it's possible, others would say it's not. It would have to go to court for it to be... answered further. But again, that's not the point of the conversation. The point I want to make is that neither sides are willing to budge. And at this point, who bears the worst of it? I mean, we're even talking about critically ill patients at these hospitals.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these critical patients are being taken as priority in terms of treatment at the moment. But of course, it is a struggle because simply there's a shortage of staff. But yeah, I mean, it's only going to get worse from now on. It's been getting worse every day with the numbers increasing of those involved in the walkouts. So, yeah, I mean, this situation is going to be prolonged, unfortunately, for patients. But we'll have to see if there's any resolution to the issue, if both sides do sit down for talks to resolve the issue. But it seems a bit unlikely at the moment.
All right, let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Rate freeze.
So the BOK has decided to maintain the base interest rate at 3.5% for a ninth this straight session, continuing its tight monetary policy. Can you run us through the BOK's decision?
Yeah, so more of the same, really. Wait and see, and having a watchful eye on the US Fed as well to make sure that their interest gaps don't widen too much. This decision is based on several considerations, including the consumer price inflation rate not falling to the BOK's target of 2%, as well as the ongoing increase in household debt. The BOK fears that lowering the interest rate prematurely could reignite these issues. Now, furthermore, with the current significant interest rate gap between Korea and the US, there's no incentive actually for the BOK to reduce rates before the Fed does, as it could, of course, lead to capital outflow and exchange rate instability. Now, the BOK is holding its view that it won't be easy to lower the key rate by the end of the first half of this year. The BOK predicts that the consumer price increase rate will briefly rise due to factors like agricultural product prices, but will then gradually decrease. Now, the bank maintains its inflation forecast for the year at 2.6% and its economic growth forecast at 2.1%. The BOK is also concerned that growing household debt could dampen consumer spending and hold back growth as well. Now, despite higher borrowing costs, household loans extended by banks in Korea rose for the 10th straight month in January, driven by mortgage loans. While the governor emphasized that an early rate cut is unlikely, Lee Chang-yong hinted that the central bank may change course based on May's revised forecast. Therefore, experts generally expect the BOK to continue its hold on rates through the first half of the year, potentially beginning to lower rates in the second half following the Fed's expected policy shift. There's kind of differing opinions on the exact timing of when in the second half such a rate cut or the easing of monetary tightening will happen, but nothing for the first half anyway. So we'll have to see what those May data shows.
All right. And from what I understand, U.S. consumption is still pretty high. Trying to cool inflation in the midst of that, it just doesn't seem like an easy task or a short-term one at that. So we'll wait and see until the second half of this year. Why do I have a hunch the theme of this year will be continued tough economy?
Yeah, exactly.
It is
a global trend. So it's not just isolated to Korea. It's going to be tough for the time being. But hopefully things turn around in the latter half of the year.
On this Friday morning, sort of a we're all in this together perspective, if you will. All right, let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Takashima Day.
So territorial claims at the heart of the thorny Seoul-Tokyo relations issue. We'll get a closer look at this story. The Korean government has summoned a top Japanese diplomat to protest yesterday's annual Takashima Day event in Japan that celebrated a claim to Korea's Tokyo Islands. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, so we mentioned yesterday that Japan does mark the day of claiming territorial claim to the Tokyo Islands, what they call Takashima Day. And because of this, the foreign ministry summoned Mibei Taisaki, the deputy chief of the mission at the Japanese embassy in Seoul, and lodged a protest. This is usually the procedure that happens when such an action is taken by Japan. Now, in response, Mibei stated that the Takashima Islands are an integral part of Japanese territory historically and according to international law. Now, the ministry released a statement demanding an immediate halt to such events. It added that the foreign minister, Choteo, raised the issue actually during a meeting with his Japanese counterpart, Kamikawa Yoko, on Wednesday in Brazil. They discussed that issue. He was said to have protested against the involvement of Japanese government officials in the event and reiterated that Tokyo has always been Korean territory. But this has been an ongoing, long-standing issue between the two countries. Since 2013, the Japanese government has been sending officials to this event, and there's simply no change to that. It's happened ever since the Shinzo Abe administration took office, and basically the same government and conservative government has been in office since. It's just been a kind of an extension of that Abe era. So yeah, it's unlikely to see any changes unless there is a kind of a change in government to the liberal side or any other conservative government with different views. But of course, with the Japanese political system is similar to that of the UK. You pick a party and they basically could remain in power for years and years on end if they manage to get re-elected. But yeah, for the time, it's always been a thorny issue between the two countries, especially amidst the efforts by the Yoon administration to better relations between the two countries. But yeah, these underlying issues still remain. So it's going to be tough.
I know you're not a political science professor, but how is it working out for you in the UK, having a single party remain supreme?
Where do I start? We're going to have a whole show, two-hour show dedicated to this, venting over
No,
it,
no, but no. This is not the dumping ground or the place, but I just wanted to make a point that because we seem to assume that the grass is always greener on the other side with a different political system, do they have a better chance? And no, democracy has always been really difficult, so we'll leave it there for now. But it is unfortunate that we're seeing a repeated case of Japan's administration sending high-ranking officials to Takashima Day. Let's move on to our final keyword of the day.
First U.S. trip.
So Foreign Minister Choteo will visit the United States next week for talks with U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. This will mark Cho's first bilateral meeting with Blinken since he took office last month. What's on the agenda?
Right, so the trip will come on the heels, of course, of the G20 foreign ministers meeting that was held in Brazil. Cho has actually met with Blinken and his Japanese counterpart in Rio de Janeiro in a trilateral meeting. So this upcoming meeting will be the first bilateral one. At that trilateral meeting, they highlighted the importance of trilateral coordination on North Korea issues. Now, the bilateral talks are scheduled for Wednesday next week, Washington time. The foreign ministry said Cho and Blinken will discuss and reaffirm the solid alliance between the two countries. They'll also assess the implementation of the agreements reached between the two sides in the follow-up to the leaders' summit that happened last year. Now, the two sides will also discuss ways to strengthen the South Korea-U.S. extended deterrence capabilities. They'll also likely discuss plans for more exchanges throughout the year. Now, economic security issues such as the Foreign Entity of Concern regulations in the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act are also anticipated to be topics of discussion. A ministry official stated that they would request the U.S. administration's attention to ensure South Korean companies can benefit from tax credits and subsidies corresponding to their investments in the U.S. They're still trying to find some middle ground. Cho also plans to meet with key figures from Congress and academia to seek bipartisan support for the development of the alliance, particularly in light of the upcoming US presidential election happening in November. There's kind of concerns that if Trump is reelected to the White House, then his, you know, protectionist policies will come back into play, and that'll be a bit of a headache and concern for South Korea. So they're trying to, you know, preemptively try and find some countermeasures to that, or responses. Choi is also said to be considering a trip to the UN headquarters in New York as well.
Thank you so much, Adam, for a week's worth of coverage, really more so this week than others. And we'll see you next week.
You're very welcome. More of the same next week. I'll see you on Monday.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.